Welcome to The Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off, is your host, Niall McCarthy.
Phoenix Rising family, our team is dropping points like a monsoon drops rain. We're losing games almost as consistently as the temperatures are rising in Phoenix. We're thirsty for wins like the desert is thirsty for rain. And while we anticipate the wins, we remind ourselves that sometimes things fall apart so that better things can fall together. Things fell apart in our last game, and it was excruciating because with 10 minutes to go in the match against Memphis 901 FC, we truly looked like the stronger team. Momentum was on our side, and we believed that despite being down a goal, we could come back and we could find redemption. It wasn't to be. Things fell apart, and we live in hope that better things can fall together. We've got a fantastic analysis of that game with two outstanding guests, Devin Kerr and John Morrissey. Devin Kerr is back for his third appearance here on The Fan Experience. Devin is the lead analyst for the USL Championship. He's one of the voices you hear announcing Phoenix Rising games on ESPN and local broadcasts. And he's a co-host for the USL All Access show on SiriusXM. John Morrissey is best known for his content on Twitter under the handle at USL Tactics. He's also a co-host on the USL Show podcast and a contributor to Backheeled. John is a regular on this show with his weekly segment on news and results from around the USL that matter to Phoenix Rising fans, and he's on double duty today, joining Devin Kerr for the game roundup. We'll start off the show today with that game roundup, and then we'll get to John's weekly segment. We usually have a game preview of Rising's next match, but it's a bye week for the team. So no games for Rising in week 19, but we'll be back next week with a preview of the two games that are scheduled for the following week. Away to Louisville, then back to Phoenix to take on Sac Republic. Also next week, seeing as we're just past the halfway mark in the season, we're planning a special segment. Please join us for that. Let's get to that game roundup with Devin Kerr and John Morrissey, but to put it all in context, here's Kelly McCarthy to set the scene for us. Kelly, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Niall. I'm delighted to make a cameo appearance this week. Let's start with Memphis 901, who are second in the Eastern Conference standings with 35 points after 17 matches. Although they're coming off a 2-0 loss to the Tampa Bay Rowdies, they've had a good season so far with a record of 11-4-2. Now that record improves dramatically if you look at their home results, which are 7 wins and 2 losses. Of their 4 losses on this season, 2 were by a 1-goal margin, and their worst loss was a 3-0 loss to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. That was their first game on March 12th. They've steadily improved, and that type of loss is long forgotten. Now, their wins, on the other hand, well, several of them have been decisive. They've beaten 9 of their opponents by 2 goals or more. They've punished the MLS 2 teams, including a 5-2 win over Atlanta United 2 and a 5-0 win over LA Galaxy 2, Los Dos. So Memphis is looking for their 6th straight win at home, and they're looking to secure their spot in that tight race for the top of the standings in the Eastern Conference. Now, this is the first time Phoenix Rising has clashed with Memphis 901 in league history, and we're all just a little nervous about it. Whereas Memphis has commanded the respect of the Eastern Conference through their performance in this campaign, Phoenix Rising is running on fumes. Phoenix is still a huge name in the USL, but at this point, it's their reputation that's propping them up. At the midpoint of the season, Phoenix is 7-10-1, with 6 losses in their 8 road games. Phoenix hasn't won a match since May 7th. And that was kind of a long time ago. They're coming off an ugly tie with OC, and that's the best news we've had in a while. There's talent, there's history, and there's heart. But is that enough to bring home 3 points on the road against Memphis 901? If you're thinking, no, Don't feel badly, you're not alone. We'll all happily take the single point and gear up for Louisville.
Awesome, Kelly. Thank you for that. This podcast comes out every Tuesday. Subscribe and follow to make sure you don't miss an episode. You can email us, thefanexperiencefc@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @fanexperiencefc. And the invitation's always there for you to come on the show to talk rising. Now, let's bump on over to hear from Devin Kerr and John Morrissey.
This is Rick Shantz, the head coach of Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, on Saturday, the 9th of July, Phoenix Rising traveled to Tennessee to take on Memphis 901. It was the first time these teams faced off. Memphis were the victors, winning 3-1. I'm delighted to welcome Devin Kerr and John Morrissey to run through the game. Devin, we've seen very poor results from Phoenix this season, and I've heard many explanations. Some say that it's because we don't have Solomon Asante. Some say it's a lack of cohesiveness between players, and there are theories that it's because we've never replaced our assistant coach, Juan Guerra. There are lots of explanations, but the one that makes the most sense to me is that Phoenix are cursed. Have you heard that? Did you come up with that? And is that the most likely explanation?
I unfortunately did not come up with it. However, it is something that has come into my circle of trust. Not a square, a circle. And I actually heard it come off of the Jack Sparrow trial, not Johnny Depp. It was actually Jack Sparrow who started the rumor himself. And, you know, it is a curse. It is more of a conundrum than a pearl. And I don't know how to get to the center of it is the problem. I do know that there is plenty of talent to find the irregularity and the singularity. The problem is it escapes everybody, including myself, and we're all stuck in the same boat.
Well, John, when they were planning their trip to Memphis, could you have envisioned that Phoenix might have been successful in this trip?
Given how good Memphis has been, it was always going to be a tall task. And I think the hope sort of faded about 5 minutes in when you saw how good 901 looked in the early stages. But yeah, I mean, you have to keep the hope if you're Phoenix, right? I mean, you've stuck with the Shantz regime. You're hopefully trying to get some momentum back.
And I saw lots of glimmer of light during this match as well. I'm not ready to throw in the towel by any means. Before we get to the game highlights, let's take a look at the starting 11. According to ESPN Plus, the boys lined up in a 4-4-2. The USL website says that it was a 4-5-1. Devin, you're behind the scenes. Which one of these actually comes from the coach?
Well, here's the problem that Phoenix has run into, and I'm pretty sure John can step into this as well, given the statistics that you look at and the way that they've played. Phoenix no longer has an identity as to how they should be playing. Phoenix doesn't have a true formation. They don't have any tendencies anymore. The fluidity in which some of their buildups used to be have long started to escape them. And so when I looked at the breakdown of the game, I saw better performances overall in terms of what it could look like, but not what it should look like. At 100%, it's a flat back four for sure. You know, you still push the outside backs. We saw all of that. I had an issue with the midfield three to start because of the fact that there was, in my opinion, the way that I looked at it breakdown wise, there was no true representation as to what they were trying to accomplish within the midfield three. So if it was going to be a three or a five, depending on how deep that you dropped Santi Moar and Marcus Epson, Quinn, Kalistri, and Louis Ma, you didn't really know who was playing an out-and-out six, an eight, a 10, if it was a single pivot, a double pivot. That can work to your benefit for sure, but for a team that's struggling for performances, looking for regular movement coming off the back line, there was no step to get into that. So when I watched them, I was confused as to what they were trying to do, which I have been in a lot of the games and the recent buildups, because we've seen the three, we've seen a five, we've seen a flat four. That's going all the way back onto an unfortunate situation that was the New Mexico United game. To me, this was just another one of those situations where the next guy was looking for, okay, well, where do we go? What do we do? To even when you got into the second half and they turned the page of sorts for a small window, but they turned it, you were still kind of looking around on the break and ball out to Santi Moar. Okay, great. Where's the overlapping run coming from? Where's the support coming from the middle? You switch sides with him. Still not there. You drop Kalistri into the back line. Still not there. And so I don't feel comfortable even giving you an idea of exactly what they were trying to do, because they didn't give you a representation of what they were trying to do.
Okay, appreciate it, Devin. How about on the other side? How did Memphis line up, John, and how did you like their starting 11?
Yeah, so they've really played 4-2-3-1 at 4-2-4-4-2 by some reckoning over the course of the whole year. I think you saw a lot of the normal personnel in the lineup, certainly Jeremy Kelly starring on the left, Philip Goodrum up top. One of the players who was maybe a surprise selection for me was Chris Allen at that kind of number 10 role. And he looked fantastic. He's someone, whether it was in the past with Atlanta or what have you, who I've kind of considered more of a 6 or an 8, but he looked fantastic. He was taking advantage of all the space that Phoenix gave up through their sloppy central three. That was really key for them. But other than that, pretty much an unchanged as expected lineup for Memphis.
Great. Okay, guys, let's get into the game. Memphis won the kickoff, and as Memphis striker Philip Goodrum was running towards the Phoenix side, Luis Cejas took him down, resulting in a free for Memphis. From the center circle, the ball's lofted to the left side of the big box. It gets headed toward goal. One of the Memphis players played the ball out to the oncoming striker, Philip Goodrum again, who blasted the ball toward goal, but Ben Lund showed his skill and denied Memphis their first goal. That was in the first minute. Devin, it was a thrilling start to a thrilling game. Who are you more impressed with, the Memphis attack or Ben Lunt?
It's definitely the consistency of the Memphis attack. By the way, we got to back up for a second, because I love John's comment about how, you know, you saw an idea 5 minutes in of how good Memphis was. If I'm on Phoenix's side of things, and I know this is a PG podcast, I'm looking around 90 seconds in going, oh, crap. Like it was that apparent. It's the foul. It's the ball down into the box, the half chance, the corner, the full chance. If I'm on the back line, I'm shaking in my boots because of how quick the start is from the home team. I give Ben Lund a lot of credit in this game, the start for sure. I actually think that he's been off this season in terms of overall performances. When you watch him, he's been shaky in decision-making. The guy that has such a commanding presence within his box has not taken full advantage of that when you watch him. If you watch the communication, he is having trouble, not saying that it's fully his fault in this aspect, but he is having trouble in the communication aspect with his backline. They aren't listening. Now, is that because of their performances or lack thereof? Is it because they have blinders on and they put earmuffs on? Is it because that he's not communicating appropriately? I lean on the goalkeeper in that situation because it's his job to find a way to organize them. But this is the best game, circumventing all of what I just said, that we've seen out of Ben Lunt in quite some time, because a lot was thrown at him. I looked at the first half. In the first 10 minutes, this could have been 2, possibly 3-0. In the first 25, 30 minutes, it could have been 3, possibly 4-1. I'm not fully convinced, by the way, that the opening goal for Memphis isn't offside. When I've gone back and looked at it a couple of times, they're both advanced behind the back four. The ball is sprayed forward. It looked like the back post run. Not only is the ball forward, but the back post run is in front of the attacker. I actually thought it could have been an offside position. Either way, decent performance from Ben Lunt. But again, another sloppy start from Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah. Guys, I want to just definitely give kudos to Memphis. You know, after that initial attempt, there were 3 more shots on goal over the 15 minutes that followed. But then something happened that gave me some hope in the 16th minute. Santi Moore is attacking on the left side. He's running toward the end line, attempts a cross. The ball gets blocked, falls to the Memphis captain, who didn't handle it well, allowing Babacar Jai to clean it up. Jai dribbled forward as he reached the end line. He sent a beautiful cross to Marcus Epps, who's on the right side of goal, just yards out. Epps pops it up, puts his laces through the ball. Surely a goal here, but sadly not. It deflected off one of the defenders, and it's a corner. John, just want to give kudos to that. That was a beautiful attempt and a beautiful beautiful combination there with Epps and Jai.
Yeah, and I think what created the chance in the first place was that it was one of the more composed moments from the Phoenix midfield. Cejas and Calistri were there in position centrally, making sure that Memphis couldn't get the ball into Aaron Molloy. They have to look wide. And that's exactly why you brought in Babacar Jai to begin the season. You get that spark from him to go and get the interception. He puts in a really good cross. Hurst is making a nice run that distracts the center back. And I mean, if you're Epps, you probably have to be scoring that. That's why they brought him into this squad. And you've just not seen enough of that over the course of the season.
John, quick question for you, John. I actually have not been able to find this statistic with all the tools that we have at our disposal. I know your background. I know, you know, what you've been able to get your hands on. Do we have a stat for the biggest missed chances? Because with all due respect to Marcus Epps, he's got to be right there in the top 10.
In terms of like underperforming your expected goals, there's no one doing worse than Santi Mohar this season.
I'm sure
Epps is not far behind him.
Yeah. I mean,
wow.
Yeah. It's, you talk about the opening 90 seconds, that play right there was Marcus Epps's season in a nutshell. Like you couldn't ask for anything else outside of the fact that maybe he played it to somebody else. Right. Because like his MO this entire season, which is the exact opposite of what he was brought in for, is hold the ball until he gets support and then play it to somebody else and put them in a bad spot or an absolute blinder of a chance that he just sends wide or up over the goal. I mean, if this guy, if you could get half of what Marcus Epps was capable of last year, and I think Phoenix fans might have been confused as to what they were getting for him. Like he was never going to replace Solomon Asante. You talked about Solomon Asante earlier. No one is going to replace Solomon Asante, not even Solomon Asante. Like if you look at his numbers, you can talk about the digression there. His numbers are more than flattering for the season that he had last year because his season wasn't that good. And yet he still found a way to have a sort of influence on it. Marcus Epps was never going to be a guy that came in and gave you a double-double. He was never going to be a guy that came in and give you double-digit goals. Maybe you got 5 to 7, 8 tops out of him. You're looking for him to stretch the game and provide for people. But the problem is you're looking for him to stretch the game. He would stretch the game, try to provide, slow the game down, and then try and give to somebody else. And then everything breaks down. I mean, that play right there to me just kind of, it's the person walking out of a warehouse, flipping the light off. Like I'm done here. That's enough for me. Thank you very much.
I want to stick with our attackers for a second, Devin. John mentioned how Hurst had a nice play that he moved and drew the defenders with him. We're not seeing Hurst getting a whole lot of the ball. And is that because he's not making himself available, or is there a breakdown that we're just not getting him the ball?
So to me, there's a couple of things. Number one, he's not big enough. He's not a big enough guy to be a target number 9, the physical side of things. If you look historically, not right now, but if you look historically how Phoenix want to play, that position has always been filled by someone that has been tall enough, that has been big enough, that has been strong enough, willing to do to the defensive chasing. The latter portion of that I'll get to in a second. The physical side of things is rough for him because he's not a target guy. Yes, he has pretty good feet. He's pretty decent in tight-knit spaces. I'll give him that. And he certainly has a knack for goal. Combination play at times eludes him because he's got to be better at learning when the bumps come to bounce off of that and work through it. He can't work through it at this point in time because everybody behind him on the defensive front is much bigger and they know how to play the physical game. As a former center back, it's really simple for a guy that's tactful to just step in, put a shoulder on him or bump his backside when he's receiving the ball, you know, play the mind games, both mentally and physically to push through a player like that. And he gets off of it. Now, the defensive side is an issue because it affects both sides of the ball. I talked about if it's Rufat Dadashov, if it's Adam John, if it's Chris Cortez, Didier Drogba, no matter who played the 9, they all fit the same mold. He doesn't. And so he has to work harder. From an IQ standpoint, he's not up to par with what those guys were at on the pressing side of things defensively, even the pressure side of it. So when he doesn't get it right, he's out of position. If a ball immediately is turned over and they're trying to play into him, that position has been vacated because of his inability to step into it. I don't overly blame him for all of that. However, not being able to pick up a decent amount of it at this point in the season is certainly a problem.
Okay. Well, let's fast forward to the 29th minute when we saw the first goal coming, and that was from Memphis. They played from their own half through the center to Jeremy Kelly, who did well to get free and play the ball forward to Luis Fernando, who was on the right side of the area. Fernando crossed the ball, laying it up for Philip Goodrum, who had made no mistake. So it's 1-0. Devin, I'm just going to stick with you. We could have closed down Jeremy Kelly in the center of the park. We could have played Fernando a little tighter. Were Phoenix simply outplayed, or were we negligent in defense?
Negligent, and it's not even close for me.
John?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, same thing. John. Yeah, the same answer. It's the exact same pattern that has seen Memphis be so successful all year. You have to be ready for it. Jeremy Kelly is going to be drifting inside. Goodrum's going to be making that same run leftward to buy space. If you're Phoenix and you're Kevon Lambert specifically, who's stepping up poorly, getting out of position, what are you doing? If you're Jai, why are you not tracking Luis Fernando down the flank? It's a scenario you have to be prepared for, because it's what this team does every single time.
Devin, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'm with him. I look at it on a double-headed front for sure. Like, you can't be negligent on the runs. Like, how, if you're Jai in that situation, that ball's only going to one spot. Like, you're tucked tighter in, you're already moving one direction. If you're moving in the negative direction, meaning you've got a runner on your backside and you're heading towards your own goal, you have one area to close down if you're in transitional. And that's to make sure that the ball doesn't split your center back. If the ball comes up over your right shoulder and goes into the corner, yes, it's an aggressive ball. And depending on where the support is coming from, it can be a dangerous ball. But in this situation right now, that's your best outcome. Outside of stepping on it and having them recycle the other direction, it is your best outcome because it's moving away from goal. It allows every other defender or midfielder to come back and help out defensively, and it buys you time. Instead, once again, it's the same mistake over and over. The spacing is off. You allow that dissecting ball through. Even the fact that you even get it to Kelly and allow him to come that far in is ridiculous. But you allow it to come through, and then all of a sudden, everybody else is looking around. I don't understand, and John will probably be with me on this one. There are so many mistakes being made right now that a 10-year-old can figure out. And that's going to sound harsh, and it's going to sound terrible, and I'm going to get lit up by locker room talk. I don't care, because people can point a finger at Rick Shantz. They can talk about Bobby Dooley. This comes down to a performance for me, an effort from the players, and it's been lacking for multiple games to the point that from a tactical standpoint, they have no clue what's going on and are making childish mistakes.
Well, in the minutes that followed, Memphis tightened the screw. They followed up with a convincing shot on goal by Chris Allen and a second goal just minutes later. It was in the 34th minute. Memphis were on the right side of the Phoenix box. Reese Buckmaster took it toward goal with an ambitious 1-2 with Jeremy Kelly. He seemed to have way too much time to control the ball and deliver it to the bottom left corner of the Phoenix goal. John, excellent play from Buckmaster. Could Phoenix have done better?
They absolutely could have. It was a similar scenario to what you saw with the previous break, in that Kelly has drifted in because of that run. Phoenix is a little bit out of position. Goodrum is occupying a center back, and then Buckmaster is just there on the overlap. I don't know if you need more support from the midfield in this scenario or what. You'd obviously want Jai's tackle attempt on Fernando to come off. It's, again, just a series of sloppy mistakes, players being just that bit out of position that lets Memphis advance.
Yeah. Well, minutes later, Santi Mora is dribbling toward the Memphis end line on the left side of the pitch. He attempts a cross. It gets deflected out for a corner. Aidan Quinn takes the corner, sends the ball to the back post to the head of Kev Lambert, who forcefully heads it into the net. Nice work by Lambert. What do you think, Devin?
I'm trying to figure out what's worse, the lack of marking on the first two Phoenix goals, or the fact that you let Kev Lambert all alone on the back post. I mean, it's terrible. Jeremy Kelly's involved. If I'm not mistaken, Niall Logue is the gentleman who rotates to the back post here. You're looking at Joey Farrell. You're looking at Kev Lambert. And for me, those are the two most dangerous from an aerial threat standpoint. Can't allow him. And to be fair, the ball by Aidan Quinn, and let's be clear, Aidan Quinn is one of my favorites, if not my favorite midfielder in the entire league, regardless of form this year. Like, I love the guy. The ball that he plays is nothing groundbreaking. It's not like there's a ton of rotation at any point in time. There's picks set and this, that, and the other. Lambert just drifts off to the back post and they let him free. It's if it was Phoenix in the blue jerseys, I wouldn't be shocked. Let's put it that way.
Mm. John, anything to add to that?
No, I mean, Phoenix is hardly moving at all. Lambert just kind of loops around the scrum in the middle and no one marks him. It's just that easy.
Well, from there, we saw Jeremy Kelly hit the crossbar. Chris Allen had a shot blocked. It took us to stoppage time. We saw Kev Lambert in the box coming very close to beating Trey Muse, the Memphis goalkeeper. No goal. It brings us to halftime. Memphis are up 2-1. Devin, I'd say that's about as exciting a game as we've seen in a while. What are your thoughts?
I had the announcer for the road feed come to me. I was actually on air at this point in time. I was calling the Orange County Monterey Bay snooze fest that was. And I had the announcer come to me and say how poor the first half was from Phoenix. Even with the goal, I'm not sure. Because of the setup for both teams and the lack of execution for one, I'm not sure what's more poor at this point in time. Removing the second half, mind you. The Loudoun game, the Vegas game, or the first half against Memphis? Just because of the tendencies for teams. I watched it last night when I got home, and then I watched it again this morning. I still don't understand. The problem is what they're trying to accomplish. I mentioned there's a lack of identity, you know, 5 minutes into this opportunity to sit with you guys and going into the dressing room, it's the same thing. Like it's the same mistake over and over. There's no desire. There's no grind. There's no grit. There's no effort. I used the word effort before, but it's much further than that. Like, this was a team. I can't tell you who it was last night that I was texting with, because the information will eventually come out in about a week and a half. But I was discussing this with someone last night, and we were talking about why the team is in the situation that they're in. And we were discussing Rick and Bobby and players that were brought in, and they've always just like survived, which is crazy because the team has survived to ridiculous results. But like, that 2019 team, and I'm not taking anything away from the 20 game win streak, but like over half of those wins were just finding a way to win a game. They weren't good. They were just finding a way to win a game, and they got lucky in certain instances, and luck certainly takes it. And I could probably sit here and go on and on and on about all of that, which we can if you want, but I watched it again, and coming out of watching it twice, I go into halftime just going, what is this team doing? What is your desire moving forward?
Yeah, I'm with you on the 20 game win streak. I'm kind of with you. I feel like luck played a part. There were a lot of games that were not convincing. I was at the Los Dos game when it was Phoenix in Los Dos. And just coming into the last 10 minutes of the game, we were definitely saying, it's over, we're done. And we came back with two goals. It was either in extra time or close to stoppage time. It was either in stoppage time or close to it. And there were a lot of games that were like that, that you felt like you walked away, you just willed the ball to get in the net in those last few minutes. So I'm with you to a certain degree on that 20 game win streak. But John Morrissey, let's get back to this game. What were your thoughts on the first half of the game?
Yeah, I mean, everything we've talked about, it's the recurring issues with defensive sloppiness, that lack of effort, where there are times where you wonder if this team has quit. You get those flashes of potential, though, like that Epps chance when you get Santi Maher with a little bit of a head of steam behind him. But those chances are so fleeting and so rare. And there's this underlying sloppiness where when you come out week to week, you have no idea what system this team is running. And we talked about it at the beginning, where that lack of consistency really hurts you at a certain point. So it was disheartening for sure.
Right. So into the second half, Ryan Flood takes over from an injured Babacar Jai. Both teams have good looks. A shot from Memphis's Goodrum is blocked. Phoenix's Santi Moore forces a save from Memphis's goalie again, Trey Moose. Joey Farrell and Kev Lambert have good attempts following corner kicks. In the 62nd minute, there are two substitutions. Irokosi Donasiano replaced Channing Chaston. That's a midfielder for a full back. And also Lamine Jonnet replaced Marcus Epps. Devin, I just want your thoughts on those subs, specifically when you're putting Iracozie Donaciano in for Channing Chaston. So that's a midfielder for a full back. Are you getting more hopeful that your back line is understanding what needs to happen and we need more in the midfield and more pressing forward?
No, it's just an easy switch in terms of personnel that they're looking to pull Joey Calistri out of the midfield, drop him onto the back line. I can remember, I believe it was the 2019 season when, you know, Rick and everybody there, including Bobby, they were very convinced that Joey Calistri at that point in time, his next step was going to be an outside back, and that was going to be his ability to take a step to the next level was going to be at the outside back spot. Now, it's turned out that he's more of a Swiss Army knife, and that there's nothing wrong with that, but you're looking for fresh legs. You're looking for intensity. We addressed it briefly earlier that remove the lack of identity for the entirety of the team within the midfield. You need to find a way to get an extension. That's probably the biggest miss with not having Arturo Rodriguez is the fact that you don't have someone that's willing on a regular basis to take that move and jump into a 10 spot. Regardless of where that playmaking ability occurs on the field, they didn't have that. I'm not saying that that's going to rest on the shoulders of Donaciano, because if you look at his performances within the team, that's not his role. He's an out-and-out eight that'll drop into a double pivot at times, and that's it. But fresh legs, vision, and to be honest, trying to prove something. That's a young pro who, if I'm him, and this has nothing to do with Phoenix, if I'm him coming into an organization in that situation, I'm trying to prove myself to get back to my parent club so that I can get some reps. I'm trying to prove myself to my loan club that I need to be involved in the lineup more. It doesn't matter if there's a Phoenix on your badge, if you're wearing a Monterey Bay jersey, if you're playing for Louisville, that kid's going to care. And so that's the idea within that change. Tactically, they definitely were on the front foot more. I still saw a lack of vision within the build itself. Like they definitely strung some more passes together. There was good intensity about Ryan Flood on the left-hand side, but just within the change overall, that's a pretty traditional move from Rick and the personnel that he has at play.
Okay. So you mentioned that Phoenix were doing better, and I definitely agree with you there. Memphis, our momentum was with Phoenix. Lamine Jonnet and Greg Hurst both had shots on goal, both being assisted by Santi Moore. In the 74th minute, we came super close. Aidan Quinn had a free kick from the right side of the park, looking for Lambert on the far post. Lambert connected with his head, but put it just wide. Phoenix are doing well, both teams fighting hard, and then it fell apart when Ryan Flood got tangled up with a Memphis player and got a red card. Devin, was Ryan Flood clumsy with his feet, or did he stomp on that Memphis player?
It's absolutely absurd to me that some of your fan base respectfully think that he wasn't at fault here. That's a joke. And I don't care if people hate me for this. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly where his feet are. I actually would go back to the opening 10 minutes, and I love me some Joey Farrell. I think he brings great character to the team, but I don't know, 5 minutes in, 10 minutes in, he steps on someone as well. I believe it might've been Philip Goodrum on the near touchline. It was. Yeah. How he escaped without a yellow card, I will never know. I've seen referees throw someone out for less than that. He definitely deserved a yellow card though. So let's go back to Ryan Flood. Ryan Flood knows exactly what he's doing. It's right in front of him. Even on the slow-mo breakdown, if you watch him, his head is down the entire way. Maybe you could make an argument for the first step in the sense that, okay, his foot's coming down and he sees it and he's trying to move out of the way and the leg gets in the way and okay, he steps on him and he's trying to move. His other foot comes down with full force. This is a young pro who made a terrible mistake and put his team in a bad spot. It was horrific to me.
Is he going to miss the next few games, you think?
No, given the way that the USL is policing play this year, he's going to get one game and be fine. What I would have given to have played in a world like this, by the way. two games for dissent because I verbally assaulted a referee. But you can step on someone twice and you're going to get one game. And I don't care if I get yelled at by USL, because I will for this, and that's fine. But it's ridiculous. Like that is negligent and aggressive behavior. Like if someone's laying on the ground and you knock a ball, whether you mean to or not, if you ping a ball and it hits them in the head, you're going to get thrown out and you're going to get two games and this kid's going to get one.
Right. Well, I think things fell apart for Phoenix after that. It is what it is. It was in the 82nd minute. Memphis would capitalize, scoring their third goal in the 86th. And although there was fight from both teams, that was essentially it. John, kudos to Memphis. They deserve the win, but I'm certainly not writing off Phoenix Rising for that performance, especially in the second half. Are you?
I mean, some of the adjustments were good. I think that Moar getting onto the right side, putting John A on the left, where they're both on their stronger foot, able to cross in, was a good move that stretched Memphis a little bit. They got some chances, but at the end of the day, I think the frustration is building. And you saw that with the stamp from Flood that led to another poorly marked set piece opportunity. It's just indicative of where this Rising team is at, where you take one step forward with a little bit of a positive second half, and then you immediately kill it off with dumb mistakes. You know, I don't have high hopes for this team, just given how the West is shaking out. It's a tough scenario.
Okay, well, John isn't holding a lot of hope there for Phoenix Rising. Will they make the playoffs, Devin?
Ugh, I knew you were going to ask me this. Let's put it this way. If I had to bet, I would say no. I'm not a betting man. Unfortunately, it's not allowed in my contract that I'm not allowed to bet on the league that I get insider information on, which I think is absolutely absurd. But no, I don't see it. I look at the depth to John's comment. I look at the depth of the Western Conference and the way it's playing out, and it's the deepest the conference has ever been, especially when you compare it to the East. But yeah, when I look at the teams, for me, I 100%, because of the totality of performances I've seen this year, I 100% see San Antonio, Colorado Springs, San Diego, and believe it or not, even with the table where they sit, I see Sac getting in. That those four for me are locked in, regardless of where they sit. From there, yeah, New Mexico should probably get in. El Paso should probably get in. But I've seen Oakland play lights out in games. Maybe not for a full 90, which is a problem with all the draws, but I've seen them play lights out in games. To me, Phoenix right now, given everything that we've seen, probably is like a 9 spot at best. But it's very difficult to throw your name into that hat because of what could be in the future. And sure, we all don't know what that is, right?
Sure. So one option is potentially bringing on new players, better players. Is that available in our league? You know, in other leagues, there's a window and that window is set in time. What is the deal with the USL?
Now you're trying to get me fired.
No. I'm looking for an answer for this.
Here, I'll make an easier answer for you. Phoenix has all the ability they need in-house to get the job done and be a playoff team right now. Let's put it that way, without getting new players or anything. That team has plenty of talent to not just be a playoff team, to be a playoff contender. That gives you an idea of how far off they are at this point in time. Now, suspensions, injuries, international rotation, whether those injuries are short-term or long-term, there's much more at play right now than lack of talent for this team. That's the most appropriate answer I can give you with the chair that I have to hold.
Okay, great. Well, John, with the talent that we have, and you know, we know that Niall Dunn is out, and we know that Arturo Rodriguez is out. So with the rest of the squad that's available, what's your starting 11?
Obviously, you're going with Ben Lute in goal. Not even a question there. Darnell King probably at right back. I mean, there's not really an alternative there. And he's been solid enough, albeit with some defensive mistakes. He can get up on the overlap a little bit. For me, I'd go with Farrell and Musa as the center back pair. You could argue for Kevon Lambert there, but you want him in the midfield optimally, I think. I'm leaning Flood at left back, probably. I like what you get from Jai. I think he's just too mistake prone. In a perfect world, the pace he brings, the real sense of energy and dynamism on the ball is an improvement over Flood, but he just doesn't have the discipline. Moving into the midfield, I'm going with a three, much as Phoenix has run for a lot of years past. Lambert has to be the holding midfielder. He's the best at that skill in the entire league on his day when he's really clicking. He really grounds what you're doing. He's a safe pair of hands in possession. Aiden Quinn and Primi Sejas would play alongside. I think both, but Quinn is, to echo what Devin was saying earlier, probably the best box-to-box player in the league on his day again. Sejas has shown a real knack for creativity. He's got a long shot on him. Another safe pair of hands in possession. And I think that we've not seen a ton of that in recent weeks, especially when he's been out. The front line is an interesting question. I almost wonder if someone like Babacar Jai would be better served as a left winger where he can just bomb up and down. But I think ultimately you just have to hope that Moar Hurst Epps comes good. And on paper, this looks like a team that should be top three in the West, right? But time and time again, you've seen this lineup or something very similar to it, and it's not come up with results. And that's kind of my struggle with this whole exercise.
Okay, well, Devin, the struggle's over to you. What are you seeing for a starting 11?
Do I have to pick 11? can I play three aside? No, I would probably say the exact same that John said. To add a couple of comments, because I agree with everything that he said. If you take veteran experience and the overall footballing IQ, you can't convince me that Darnell King, regardless of form right now, doesn't belong on the field to play. And he has been poor, but he would admit that as well. But a guy who throughout his career, regardless of stops, has just been the utmost professional, good person, first and foremost. And for him to be given the captain's armband and then to not even be available in the 11 is a problem to me. It does tell you a lot of things about what's going on behind the scenes. And I will say that what is interesting for me, and the only difference that I say would say with John and I, is if Sievert Haugli and Donaciano weren't on loan, I might answer differently. If they weren't loan players, I would probably give them a shout right now just because of talent and the ability of what they could bring in the future and the desire to prove themselves. But because they're on loan, and it might counteract my point from earlier, but because they're on loan, the better they play, the more likely they are going to be to depart from the system, right? So that's why I stick with the exact same 11 that John brings to the table. At the end of the day, these guys were sought after for a reason. They were given the opportunity to come to one of the most preeminent clubs in the entire USL Championship, and they're not performing. So is it Rick? Is it, to your comment earlier, Niall, about not replacing Juan? We can talk about that. But no matter what goes on in the front office and behind the scenes, and yes, it rests on the coach, it does still come down to the players' abilities to perform. And I feel bad for them right now because there is no fire in that kitchen. It looks like a lot of them don't care. I hope I'm wrong, but having a decent head on my shoulders, in my opinion, and then communicating with people around the league and around the footballing world, I mean, people that know this team outside of the championship in MLS and abroad are going, what's wrong with that team? And so people see it. No, I feel bad for the situation that everybody there is in.
Phoenix Rising is not scheduled to play Memphis 901 again in the regular season. And I'm not entirely sure that I would want to see them even in the final. Guys, this has been absolutely fantastic. Devin, it's been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
I appreciate you. Thank you, as always, Niall. Kelly, where are you, Kelly? Kelly, we miss you. You should be here over me, Kelly. Just saying.
I'll pass on that. John, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, always a delight to be here. Thanks for having me. And again, send my best to Kelly.
Will do. Listeners, stick around for the rest of the show and enjoy.
This is Greg Hurst, Phoenix Rising striker, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Next up is John Morrissey with his weekly segment on news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. John, it's great to have you back. How did things go in the USL Championship this week?
Yeah, thanks, Niall. Always happy to be doing double duty on the pod. A busy week, as always. Started on July 4th. We had a somewhat rare Monday game. San Diego Loyal went down a man. They were trailing. And then they scored two goals to beat Colorado Springs. It was a really thrilling game, and it set the tone for a good week of matchups. Wednesday was fairly busy as well. Pittsburgh beat Indy 1-0 at home. The big storyline there was Dane Kelly, who set the league appearances record. Ironically, he got subbed off for Albert Dikwa, who ended up scoring the winning goal for the Riverhounds, which has kind of set the tone for them over the whole season. Elsewhere, Detroit played a fairly unexciting 1-1 draw with Hartford. The opposite of that was the 3-3 Atlanta-Birmingham game. It was 9 goals in 3 games for Atlanta at that point. Tristan Traeger got on the score sheet once again. He was the defending player of the week. He is just on fire. Early low 20s prospect for the Atlanta system. Really good. That Wednesday slate wrapped up with a New Mexico win against RGV 1-0. The Toros didn't get a single shot on target, and New Mexico dominated, but only won because of a late penalty for Justin Portillo, one of their best players. Those teams met again on the weekend, kind of an odd match. It started out with basically monsoon conditions in New Mexico that gave way to rainbows. They switched New Mexico, that is, into a back three, which they've not really preferred this season. And this time RGV was the team that got a goal at the death, but it really just earned them a draw. Moving back east though, Pittsburgh crushed Miami 4-1 for their third straight win. Miami right now is clinging on to the last spot in the East. They've got that seventh by 2 points over FC Tulsa, who got a 2-1 win against Atlanta. They, in another trend of the week, went down a man, but they got that winner even though they were shorthanded. Brian Brown was the scorer there. He did really well as a hold-up striker that they brought on once they went down. They're just 2 back points back of the playoffs, like I mentioned, but they have played 2 more games than Miami. So kind of looking settled in the East, dare I say. Still some good results in that conference, though. Detroit got a 1-0 win over Indy. It was a 4th-minute goal for Connor Rutz, a good return to form for Detroit City, certainly. Indy are looking really rough at the moment. They've lost 5 straight matches. But luckily for them, they have New York Red Bulls too on the slate next. New York fresh off of a 6-0 loss to Louisville City, and that scoreline might have been friendly to them. Enoch Mushigalusa had a hat trick for Louisville. He was signed from Sporting Kansas City in the offseason. Had a little bit of trouble getting into the squad early, but he's been dynamite, as that result shows. And then Brian Ownby was back as the false 9 because of some injuries up top. He had 2 goals and 2 assists in the game. I'm giggling through this because it really was just dominant. A little bit less dominant, but still an assured result, came with Tampa getting a late comeback against Hartford Athletic. That was a 3-2 win for them. Leo Fernandez on the end of 2 penalty kicks later in the game. Hartford has shown a lot of heart recently, but just couldn't quite get it done. Birmingham was back on the dominant side of things as well. They got a 3-0 win against Charleston. Their press was so intense in this match. Really looked like a 2-4-4 shape with just 2 defenders a lot of the time. Juan Agudelo, a U.S. national team capped player, didn't score a goal, but was so impressive with his hold up and movement. And then Johnny Dean, the all-league right back, had a goal and assist there for the Legion. Moving back over to the West, Colorado Springs fell again. That's 4 losses in 5 games for the one-time league favorite. There was a good result for El Paso, certainly getting that win. Their striker, Josue Gomez, has 3 goals and 2 assists over the last month, and he got the deciding one fairly early on in this. The shocking game of the weekend for me was the LA Galaxy 2 getting a 5-0 victory against San Diego Loyal. You could say the scoreline was a bit misleading. San Diego went down a man very early in the game, but they were down a man last week, as I just mentioned, and ended up beating the Switchbacks. So you really do have to give credit to LA. LA has 4 wins in 5 games. They're up to 5th in the Western Conference and looking like something of a virtual lock for the playoffs at this point, which is almost exciting to see. A more boring game was Monterey taking on Orange County, a matchup of the 2 worst teams in the West. Monterey got a 2-0 win. Neither side was doing much creatively. I did want to just shout out Chase Boone for Monterey. He was a player who didn't get a lot of love with San Diego last season, hardly played a minute, in fact, But he has just been a real dynamo on the wing for them. He got the opener, was eating the right back for Orange County alive. But back to the excitement with the nightcap in that Oakland-Sacramento matchup, a 3-3 draw. On the pitch, Sacramento went with a two-striker look featuring Malik Foster up top. Juan Azucar had a really fun bicycle kick for Oakland that I would recommend you check out if you see any highlights this week. In terms of some of the off-the-pitch stuff, Sacramento's supporter group notably went silent for the entire first half in protest of the fact that the club hasn't put out a statement on inclusivity and women's rights in the wake of the Roe decision. It was really brave. It was noticeable on the broadcast where the traveling Oakland fans were very, very audible and you didn't hear a peep out of Sacramento's supporters. It was a statement, to be sure. And you saw something similar with Indy this week where there was some debate over the club's interaction with the supporters group, the Brickyard Battalion, over signs supporting women's rights. It's something that it's important for clubs to put a statement out on, certainly. And I know a lot of supporters feel that way. There's been controversy in Phoenix. And I think it's just a reminder that what happens on the pitch isn't the only consideration here, that these are real community institutions. But to back off of the serious notes, it was really a fun week in the USL, and I'm always happy to be here recapping it.
That's awesome, John. Thank you so much for doing that. It's really important that the serious stuff gets covered too. Really appreciate you. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Here we go now. Okay. This is Sarah from Union 602, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, I started today's show with the idea that sometimes things fall apart so that better things can fall together. I didn't make that up myself, although I wish I had. It's a quote from Marilyn Monroe. I certainly hope that better things are in store for our boys. We live for the day. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing our love for the beautiful game, even when things fall apart. We don't make money from this podcast. We don't have advertising. We do it for the love of this team and the love of our Phoenix Rising community. All we ask is that you spread the word by sharing this podcast with a friend. Thank you for your continued support. You are seen and you are loved. Huge thanks to our guests, Devin Kerr and John Morrissey. I can't believe I was able to get these two guys together on the show. It was truly awesome. Thanks too to Kelly McCarthy for her cameo. This wouldn't be happening without her. I hope that you have a fantastic week. Even though there isn't a game to prep for, let's let everybody around us know where our heart lies. Go Rising on three. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go Rising!